International.
Ici Radio-Canada. This is Canada.
This is Radio Nederland, the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland.
You're tuned to Swiss Radio International in Bern.
This is Free China as a presentation of the Voice of Free China, the international service of the Broadcasting Corporation of China.
This is Radio Havana, Cuba.
Broadcasting from Cuba, free territory in the Americas.
This is Radio South Africa.
This is Yugoslavia Radio Belgrade calling.
This is Israel broadcasting from Jerusalem.
This is Radio Pyongyang of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. I'm Keith Perron. Today we're going to be continuing our look at the media in China, but today we're going to be going into the archives, and I'll tell you about that a little later on in the program. First, however, New Zealand television sports, drama, and news is starting to be relayed through Pacific public broadcasters as part of the New Zealand government's initiative. The broadcasters will be able to draw down content from a so-called warehouse of publicly funded New Zealand programs. New Zealand's Pacific Economic Ambassador, Shane Jones, launched the initiative last week in Solomon Islands and Papua New Guinea. He speaks next to Radio New Zealand's Sally Round.
It's an attempt on our part to improve the offerings, to provide both information, entertainment material, and knowledge about New Zealand to further broaden and deepen our footprint amongst our Pacific neighbours.
I understand that New Zealand is contributing, what, $400,000 to this?
Well, the government used to give money to Television New Zealand. That money has now been redirected to meeting the costs associated with providing this content. And, of course, the asset is on the Pacific broadcasters themselves to draw down the content as their schedule allows. But the various tele stations up in Port Moresby were very enthusiastic. The broadcasting bureaucrats were very enthusiastic. Not surprisingly, the young people are as keen as mustard on viewing sport. There is some rugby, there's some soccer, and a variety of other sports. There are ongoing challenges working with both the staff and training the next generation of Pacific broadcasters. There's a lot of enthusiasm to have some of our senior broadcasting semi-retired folk maybe or current professionals to go up there and work with them. And at the moment, we do have a number of Pacific media graduates or students coming down to New Zealand. They work in various media outlets and take that knowledge back up home.
So a bit of a two-pronged approach here, that a bit of soft diplomacy and some training as well for the local people in the Pacific Islands.
It's a part of the quiver of diplomatic arrows that we have in the Pacific. There's a demand for it. We've got the material. I've been amazed by the enthusiasm from a whole range of people to actually make it work.
You say some news and current affairs is going in there?
Yes, Parliament TV at various times will be available. New Zealand current affairs shows, New Zealand news. The other area that people have expressed an interest in receiving the material has been those people catering for tourists. I think this New Zealand content is going to increase both the offerings, which will be valuable as part of their broadcasting sector, but also good for visitors. But the key point is that we're looking to have a broad coverage at this stage, not stretching into Micronesia, but certainly Melanesia and amongst our Polynesian neighbours.
And given the demise of Australian broadcasting in the region, is this a bit of an effort to sort of fill the gap there?
Well, that observation has been loudly and colourfully made by professional broadcasters in the Pacific, which I think partly explains their enthusiasm for the content.
Which of the programming do you think is going to be the most popular? Is it going to be the rugby?
The reality is a lot of the young people, like in Papua New Guinea, after we had spoken, they were very focused on sport, etc. But they like the notion that there's hunting shows, fishing shows. There'll be an option for the public broadcasters to fill up their schedule with a variety of content. Kiwi drama, Kiwi kids entertainment programs, sport, current affairs, snippets of Parliament, Māori TV. So there's a variety that should give an accurate description of New Zealand insights, lifestyle choices, as is shown through our publicly funded broadcasting material.
That was New Zealand's Pacific Economic Ambassador, Shane Jones, speaking about the initiative that they launched last week in Solomon Islands and Papua New Guinea to provide New Zealand broadcasting programs from television and sports, drama and news from the public broadcasters to broadcasters in the Pacific. And he was speaking there with Radio New Zealand International's Sally Round.
This is Media Network Plus.
Well, a few weeks ago on the program, I mentioned that this month we're going to be putting the attention on the media in China, the changes that have been taking place, and also the challenges ahead. But on today's program, we're going into the archives to put everything into context. Now, this was a report that Jonathan Marks of the Media Network program, the original program on Radio Nederland, did on the date of April 16th, 1992. Now, some of the broadcasters that he mentions are no longer around, but it gives an insight to what it was like back then. Here's Jonathan Marks.
This is Radio Beijing. Please remember June the 3rd, 1989. The most tragic event happened in the Chinese capital, Beijing. Thousands of people, most of them innocent civilians, were killed by fully armed soldiers when they forced their way into the city.
You may recall that one broadcast in English from Radio Beijing, where the announcer reminded the world of the bloodshed that had happened late on June the 3rd and into the early hours of June the 4th, 1989. Since then, Radio Beijing has hardened its communist line, both in the English service, but also in its standard Chinese broadcasts too. The Asian Broadcasting Institute in Japan was set up in 1979 to research the East Asian radio situation, and they've noted a gradual change in this war of words between the two Chinas. Some clandestine stations have disappeared, but new ones have come to take their place. First, a bit of history, though. At the start of 1991, there were three clandestine stations beaming from Taiwan towards communist mainland China. Yet now, all these broadcasts appear to have been discontinued. Take Radio Democracy, for instance. It started its broadcasts as a response to Bloody Sunday, June the 4th. Tetsuya Kondo of the Asian Broadcasting Institute reported shortly afterwards on this programme that the station had been traced on July the 31st, 1989. The signal was weak in Japan, but presumably stronger in the target area. Stirring stuff. Tetsuya now reports the station's demise.
Radio Democracy has been untraced since autumn last year. The frequency was 7125 kHz, variable. 8 to 12 minutes Chinese program was repeated up to 4 times per day. But their propaganda seems to be ineffective in China.
The constant repeating technique was similar to anti-Chinese clandestines believed to operate from the former Soviet Union in the 70s. Broadcasts of Radio Democracy were kept to a few minutes, but the entire broadcast was repeated up to 4 times a day. It could be argued that the varying schedule may have been a clever tactic to deceive the communist authorities in Beijing. Such an unstable schedule would have made it time-consuming to jam. However, the overall effect of the broadcasts must have been small. If jammers couldn't find the station, then probably listeners couldn't either.
The end of their broadcast also means the end of all activities which the group has performed since the start of Cultural Revolution, 1966. They have produced programs with many faces, with many identifications, in accordance with changing situation in China.
Just before Tiananmen, there were three of these clandestine operations being run by the same Taiwanese group. Radio October Storm tried to sow seeds of discontent about the effectiveness of the October Communist Revolution. Other programs were given the title of Voice of the Liberation Army, clearly aimed at the military. And there was even a station which pretended to be the Central People's Broadcasting Station, but actually came from Taiwan. After Tiananmen, however, all the efforts were bundled together under the same name, Radio Democracy.
Another Taiwan-based station, the Voice of Democracy, began its broadcast in August 1990, has also closed down since September last year. The broadcast was quite irregular and appeared on the period of events or some anniversary dates of China.
The station gradually cut down its broadcasting time over a period of 6 months. The frequency of 8057 kHz was used by the Voice of Democracy, and according to research by the Asian Broadcasting Institute, came from a military transmitter site called New Star Broadcasting Station. The same place also puts out coded numbers. But wait, there's more. You may remember our report on a clandestine station called Voice of June 4th, which used to sign on like this. A month after the massacre in Tiananmen Square, a group of Chinese students in Chicago organized June the 4th Radio. Four staff members started making programs designed to support the pro-democracy movement and inform people on the Chinese mainland about alternative views held by Chinese communities in other parts of the world. So the group looked around for airtime and eventually managed to find it on one of the shortwave radio outlets in Taiwan. But as San Juan Lee, the director of the June the 4th radio station, explained, money ran out as Tiananmen moved into the history books.
Our station was aimed to work. We have been broadcasting to China for more than a year and a half. People are forgetting the June 4th massacre.
In the strict sense of the term, June the 4th wasn't a radio station. It was a regular radio program, costing the program makers in Chicago some $10,000 a month to make it and broadcast it. Monitoring by the Asian Broadcasting Institute indicates that although the studios of Radio June the 4th were still making programs up until the end of last May, the plug was pulled on them much earlier than that by the owners of the transmitting facilities in Taiwan. In February of 1991, the Voice of June the 4th was replaced on the airwaves over China by another clandestine program called The Voice of China. Why the relay of Voice of June 4th was stopped so early is a mystery, although the program was heard until May of 1991 on some local FM stations in the United States that serve Chinese communities. So who's behind the new operation?
The Voice of China is owned by another pro-democracy group by Chinese students in the United States. The name of the group is the Foundation for China in the 21st Century, which is based in Walnut Creek, California. The broadcast is transmitted on the same schedule as the Voice of June 4th, that is 21 to 21:30 and 21:30 to 22 hours UTC. On 15280 kHz. The program is believed to be transmitted from Huxian with an output of 100 kilowatts.
That frequency of 15280 kHz is assigned to Taiwan's Central Broadcasting System, the government-run department that's set up to broadcast programs towards mainland China. Although most of the clandestine stations don't identify where they're coming from, other stations involved in this war of words certainly do. John Fong is the director of the news department at the Broadcasting Corporation of China in Taipei. He's also head of the overseas department, the Voice of Free China.
Being a radio station wholly owned by the ruling party, Kuomintang, the KMT, I think we have a mission to fulfill. We like to decommunize mainland China and contribute our share of effort. It sounds very political, but if you look at the world today, it's not. I'm sure you heard this saying many times before that Mao Zedong said socialism, only socialism can save China, but today only China is trying to save socialism.
The Mandarin language programs from Taipei are not only broadcast to the mainland, they're also heard on Taiwan itself, and that's deliberate.
I do not broadcast to mainland China for the sake of broadcasting to mainland China. My primary people here in Taiwan, I get my income from the commercial, the businessmen here in Taiwan. I get nothing from mainland China. So by broadcasting to mainland China, financially speaking, in terms of business point of view, I'm losing money. But again, I said earlier, I think we have a mission to fulfill.
Last year, the Broadcasting Corporation of China launched a $30,000 competition, which brought them some 9,000 letters from mainland China. It's not often you hear a shortwave station give away motorbikes, microwave ovens and refrigerators. Of course, the mainland does its share of broadcasting back to Taiwan, which it regards as a rebel province. There's a special service called Voice of the Strait, run by the People's Liberation Army of China, announcing a postbox number in Hong Kong for correspondents. Voice of Jinling is another station beaming to Taiwan, this time from Nanjing. And Voice of Pujiang does a similar job from Shanghai. The Beijing-based Central People's Broadcasting Station also runs two networks for listeners in Taiwan. A mixture of medium and shortwave is used for all these transmissions. Mainland China currently jams the Chinese broadcasts of two international broadcasters, the BBC from London and Voice of America from Washington. But they seem to leave Taiwan alone. John Fong.
Some of our contents are quite provocative to the People's Republic of China. And through different channels, either from my reporters going to mainland China, I have a reporter stationed in mainland China constantly, although he or she may not be a correspondent stationed in Beijing, but he or she can go to mainland China on a short term. So I have reporters constantly coming back, going to mainland China. I just had a reporter coming back the day before yesterday. I'm sending another one pretty soon. Back to jamming. We broadcast quite a bit of items that are provocative to People's Republic. So through many channels, I was told that if I kept on broadcasting certain slogans that I use, they will start jamming us as well. I dare them to jam my news broadcast because it's too much of a political price to pay for them. If they jam us, I will certainly make that the biggest news here in Taiwan in terms of China affairs.
The focus of overseas broadcasting is changing in Taipei, and some of the output in 10 foreign languages on the Voice of Free China may suffer.
So I am also trying to cut back on my international broadcasting. This is in the plan. It's not definite yet, but I think it's the trend because the world is changing. I don't think people really listen to shortwave broadcasting to find out more about Taiwan. I think I should concentrate more on the Mandarin broadcast to the American continent and let those Chinese people living in the United States know what's going on here in Taiwan. After all, we have close to 1 million ethnic Chinese living in the United States, and that's a big market for us, I think.
John Fong. But did you know that a private entrepreneur has set up his own external service on Taiwan on the air since last October and aimed at listeners outside China and Taiwan? It has nothing to do with the Voice of Free China.
It broadcasts in Chinese, Amoy, Japanese and English.
The Voice of Taiwan. This is Francis Lee from Taipei, Taiwan. If you have dubbed the Taiwanese history...
Yes, it is English, and the name of the station is The Voice of Taiwan. The person behind it opposes politics of the present Kuomintang government and has been operating an unlicensed cable TV station in Taipei for some years.
The director, Wu Lutian, is a famous storyteller in Taiwan. The Voice of Taiwan does not broadcast regularly.
And that was a feature dating back to 1992 that Jonathan Marks did on the original Media Network program that aired on Radio Netherlands, looking at the war of words between China and Taiwan. We will continue our coverage of June 4th in the next coming weeks leading up to that date. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from the studios of PCJ Radio International in Taipei, Taiwan.
The British DX Club is one of the world's leading DX clubs, with hundreds of members both in the UK and around the globe. BDXE produce a comprehensive monthly magazine called Communication, covering all aspects of the DXing hobby. The BDXE Audio Circle is also available and is a monthly program of DX catches and general chat about radio. For more information, please write to the British DX Club, 10 Hemdean Hill, Caversham, Reading, RG4, 7SB in the United Kingdom, or visit the website at www.bdxc.org.uk. That's www.bdxc.org.uk.
Hi, my name's Colin Newell, and I'm the editor and creator of DXer.ca. Since the mid-90s, DXer.ca has been the go-to website for timely resources for the DXer, SWL, and broadcast listener. If you're looking for unbiased reviews of the most modern receivers and antennas, or are interested in participating in some of the more lively online forums all about radio, then come on by. DXer.ca, a world band radio website.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Category 105, it is PDF to total journal.
Speed 220, Category 105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
Now, actually, in other related media news, if you're familiar with our Sunday program, The Happy Station Show, which I also produce and present, I invite you to tune in this weekend. Because 2 weeks ago, I was invited by a local radio station here in Taiwan called ICRT. Now, before 1979, actually, it was in 1979 they changed name, but up until 1979, the station was known as Armed Forces Taiwan Network. And they invited me along to ICRT to talk about the Armed Forces Network station that was here in Taiwan, and we played a lot of very interesting clips. Now, we actually have a copy of that program, and we will be bringing it to you this week on Happy Station, so do tune in. All right. Now, something that we do every week at this time, and that's look at propagation. What has been happening and what we can expect. Here's our propagation editor, Glenn Hauser.
Keith from IPS in Australia, the global HF propagation forecast to May 21st. Normal at low latitudes, normal to fair at middle and high latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa through May 21st, magnetic conditions unsettled to active, shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK through May 22nd, solar activity very low. A 20% chance of G1 minor geomagnetic storms May 21st with a planetary K-index of 5. No solar radiation storms are expected. From Natural Resources Canada, the 27-day magnetic activity forecast shows a peak of DRX nanoteslas in the subauroral zone on June 4th, in the auroral and polar zones on June 5th. From Peter Coleman in Prague, the geomagnetic field will be quiet on May 25th and 26th. Mostly quiet May 22nd to 24th, 31st, June 7th and 8th. Quiet to unsettled May 21st, 27th and 30th. Quiet to active May 20th, 28th, 29th, June 1st, 2nd, 3rd and 6th. Active to disturbed May 28th, June 4th and 5th. Amplifications of the solar wind from coronal holes are expected on May 21st, 28th, 29th, and June 1st through 6th. From SWPC in Boulder, geomagnetic field reaching G1 minor storm levels on May 20th, with ANK indices of 26 and 5. Also expected on May 29th at 25 and 5. June 4th peaking at 35 and 6. Few A's and K's of only 5 and 2 expected on May 23rd, 25th to 27th, 31st, June 1st, and 7th to 9th. Solar flux dropping from 100 May 20th to 90 on May 26th to 28th, 100 again by May 30th. William Hepburn's VHF, UHF microwave maps show extreme tropospheric ducting all week along the southwest coast of Mexico and off Angola. Extremely extreme along the Red Sea, the Persian Gulf, and the Arabian Sea, that is all around the Arabian Peninsula and as far as India.
All right, thanks a lot, Glenn. And of course, Glenn will be here next week as well with another propagation update. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of the program. If you wish to contact us, our email address is very simple. It's mnp@pcjmedia.com. If you wish to listen to this program again or past editions, you can visit our website at any time. It's www.pcjmedia.com, and just click on the link for Media Network Plus. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Powell wishing you well. We'll see you again in 7 days' time. Let us know how you heard the program, of course, AM, FM, shortwave, or whatever. So until next time, 73, and, of course, 88 to the ladies.